Or,
Jolene howled, drawing a sharp wince from Andrea, who was more accustomed to the slightly more sedate antics of vampires.
I'm not stupid.
Okay, I said, scratching behind her ears. It may sound condescending, but sometimes that calmed her down.
Do you have anything to eat?
Jolene asked, sniffing the air.
I can't talk like this on an empty stomach.
Jolene couldn't do anything on an empty stomach. Mr. Wainwright helped me scavenge leftover pizza, canned stew, and some Chef Boyardee from his apartment, and then made himself scarce. Even his fascination with were-creatures wasn't enough to keep him around a hysterical female. Note to self, bring pot pies and bagged salad to the shop for Mr. Wainwright. This kind of diet could not be good for him. What happened? I asked as she gorged herself on cold pepperoni. It was always oddly compelling to watch Jolene eat. With the stark contrast between the beautiful, trim girl and the huge amounts of food she shoveled into her face. If you didn't know about her werewolf metabolism, you'd wonder where she put it all. I tried to reach out to her mind, but the jumble of images, confused, pained, and frenetic, made me dizzy.
My cousins played a little joke on Zeb, and he got so upset, she said, gnawing on reheated crust. I told him he was overreacting, and he should be glad that my cousins were trying to make him part of the pack. And then he said something about not wanting to live on the farm with the Jerry Springer family and how we were going to lose our house thanks to them. I asked what the hell he meant by that. He said he was sure I knew all about it. I told him he sounded like a paranoid jerk. He said that if I really felt that way, that he wasn't going to be able to marry me.
Her eyes welled up again.
How could he do that? How could he just break it off without even looking upset about it? How could he just leave me?
I waited for the yowl of me to end. What kind of a joke did your cousins play on Zeb?
They put a bear trap between his usual parking spot by the front door to Mama and Daddy's place. It was just a joke,
Jolene insisted.
We do it to each other all the time.
Wolves set bear traps for each other? Isn't that sort of, I don't know, culturally insensitive or something? Jolene seemed befuddled by the question.
No, it doesn't hurt that bad.
You heal 10 times faster than the average human, I told her. That bear trap could have cost Zeb a foot. He's already lost a pinky toe to your family's little jokes.
They're just being playful.
He lost an appendage, Jolene. That's not playful. That's wanton endangerment. Jolene sniffed.
Don't use the talking down the crazy person voice. And don't act like you're sad this happened. You probably set this whole thing up just to get out of wearing the bridesmaid dress.
What is wrong with you? I asked. Why would you say that?
I don't know,
Jolene cried.
He proposed to me. I was a normal person before this. He made me go crazy. I know my family's screwed up, okay? I know it's not normal for your cousin to want to marry you or for your parents to make you move in less than 100 yards away from them. I know it's not normal to be so loud and in each other's business all the time. I know they're passive-aggressive and just plain aggressive, and they pay no attention to boundaries. They know they could have hurt Zeb with these pranks, and that's half the fun for them. But what am I supposed to do? This is my pack. This is thousands of years of breeding and instinct. I can't stop that.
She sobbed and wiped at her eyes.
And that's what I told him. Then I said he wouldn't be so tense if maybe his parents were more supportive of us instead of torpedoing the wedding every chance they got. He asked me what I meant by that, and I said that it was obvious his mama would be a lot happier if he was marrying you instead of me. And when he told me that was crazy, I told him to take his ring and shove it where the sun don't shine, and I stormed off, and now I'm sitting here miserable and with no idea whether I'm getting married.
Andrea goggled. That was a Jane-worthy tirade. Really, very impressive. Please don't help, I said, turning to Jolene. And you've got to draw a line somewhere. You're marrying Zeb. His safety and happiness have to be your priority, no matter what your family does. Stand up for him. If not to show your family that you're going to be the first McLean to break this weird-ass cycle of human abuse, then to show Zeb that you're on his side. Apologize, I said, and then go perform some physical favors for him that I never have to think about. And both of you have to stop coming to me when you have relationship problems. I barely have time for my own problems, and yours are, well, weird.
You're a really good friend, Jane,
she said, shoving the remains of pizza into her mouth. I patted her arm. I know. I was serious about that last part. Gabriel's home on Silver Ridge Road would have been the crown jewel in any historical home tour, if anyone in town knew about it. Gabriel had worked for years to erase the house, with its white clapboard, big wraparound porch, and Corinthian columns, from public memory. The house was cozy and way less intimidating than you would expect inside. The rooms I'd seen were done in subtle, muted colors, soft fabrics, little knick-knacks that spoke of Gabriel's years of travel, the kind of rooms where you wouldn't expect to find your boyfriend plying your best friend with liquor. Poor Zeb looked absolutely miserable, splayed on the maroon leather couch with a glass in one hand and his head in the other. When he looked up, I saw he was wearing an eye patch. This could not be good. Okay, I heard about the bear trap. Did something happen to your eye?
No, I'm considering a career as a pirate.
Zeb snarked as he gingerly adjusted the patch strap. He winced when it snapped back into place over his eye. The elastic had given him a quailish cowlick in the middle of his dark blonde crown.
Some of the boys out at the farm were shooting off bottle rockets a few days ago. Jolene's cousin Vance wanted to show them how to use them to knock cans off a fence, and somehow one of the rockets went astray.
You got hit in the eye with a bottle rocket?
No. I got hit in the eye with the bottle. Vance wasn't watching where he tossed it when they were running from the bottle rocket.
So that, combined with the bear trap, is why you're doing the full-on Dean Martin routine? I asked, looking at the bottle between them.
I've been evicted,
Zeb said, turning away two fingers of very nice bourbon. Gabriel huffed and slugged it back himself. Considering the average vintage in his wine cellar, I wasn't surprised he wouldn't let it go to waste. This has not been your day, huh?
My landlord left me a notice today, Zeb said, making a face when Gabriel held up a bottle of vodka with a Cyrillic label. I was supposed to renew my lease next week.
He can't do that. Jolene worked so hard to leave her mark on that place, I exclaimed. Gabriel gave me a cringing, questioning look. With throw pillows and paint, I mean, nothing gross.
I went to sign the papers with Mr. Duggar, but he's decided to rent to another family,
Zeb said, his pale face stretched in tight, miserable lines.
He said Jolene's fixed the place up so nicely he can charge more than we can afford. And somehow, Jolene's Uncle Deke just happened to call today to remind her that her plot of land on the Pack compound is still available. He even offered us a brand newish trailer as a wedding gift.
Zeb sighed, planting his face in his hands as Gabriel stood to pour him a scotch.
I don't know how they do it, but they got to Mr. Duggar.
I think you might be giving them a little too much...
Yeah, you're probably right, I agreed, slipping an arm around his shoulders.
What are you going to do? Starting with, will you please pry the crying werewolf out of my shop? She's starting to disturb the customer. Emphasis on customer. We only have one.
You saw Jolene? Zeb grimaced. She was crying?
You kind of broke off your engagement. That can bring out the emotion in a gal.
I know. I need to apologize, Zeb said. But I'd like to have a home to offer her when I beg and plead.
He took a sip of Gabriel's liquor, blanched, and coughed.
Seriously, that's what it tastes like?
Zeb can only drink stuff that tastes a little like alcohol and a lot like fruit punch, I told Gabriel.
I'll start keeping some around, Gabriel said. Until then, try to finish the expensive single malt I just poured for you, peasant. I would insult you back, but you seem to own or know about all the good rental properties around town,
Zeb snorted. Giving new meaning to the words saved by the bell, Gabriel's cell phone began singing. His face when he saw the caller ID stopped me from making a joke about voicemail, which Gabriel didn't know how to use. Without a word, he left the room and said hello quietly into the receiver as he walked out onto the back porch. For lack of something better to say, I told Zeb,
I wish I could help.
Aw, I appreciate that, he said, leaning his head against mine. But you're, you know, broke.
My jaw dropped. You know about that?
I'm your best friend, he said. And you haven't had a full-time job in months. I can do math above the kindergarten level. Besides, I would never take money from you. We've never mixed money into our friendship before.
We've never had money before, I pointed out.
And so far, that's worked for us, he said.
Besides, if we're not going to take that kind of help, emphasis on the sarcastic invisible quotation marks, from Jolene's family, it would be hard to justify taking help from you.
You have a well-thought-out and emotionally mature argument, I admitted.
Dang it.
On an unrelated note, here's an interesting tidbit. Your mama kept trying to get me to eat at the funeral, which would have ended in my vomiting publicly. She does know that I've been turned, right? I assume she just refused to mention it because it interferes with her version of reality. But you did tell her, right?
Zeb winced. Every time I try, she repeats something stupid she hears on talk radio, like vampires should be rounded up and forced to live in communities far away from humans.
Still, you're marrying into a werewolf clan, and you're worried about telling her there's a vampire bridesmaid? If anything, you could use me to take the heat off Jolene and company. I gasped as realization slowly dawned. She still doesn't know you're marrying into a werewolf clan, does she?
No, he admitted, covering his face with his hands.
Whether it was from shame or to protect his eyes from my vampire death glare, I have no idea.
You know her. You know what she does with announcements like this. We're talking Valium and screaming, taking to her bed for weeks at a time. I knew there was no way she'd accept you, much less Jolene and her family. I'm just trying to get through the wedding without her making a scene. I saw what it did to Jolene when my parents threatened not to come. Can you imagine how she would handle Mama's werewolf meltdown? How much that would hurt her? Once we're married, Jolene will realize that she's better off with my family not liking her anyway.
Don't you think your family will notice something's off when the bride's side mows through the buffet? I asked.
Oh, my family'll be too drunk to notice, he said, rolling his eyes. Why do you think we're having the open bar?
That's not... Actually, that's brilliant.
I've tried everything to get Mama to behave, to be decent to Jolene, Zeb said. She says she'll straighten up and be nice, and then I get a phone call from Jolene, crying about whatever Mama said now. I've told her to ignore Mama, but she just can't. She can't stand having someone not like her. And I'm exhausted. I'm tired of being the go-between. Why can't she just handle this stuff herself?
I arched my brows at the angry, exasperated tone Zeb was using. He seemed to shake it off after a moment, rubbing his hands over his patch and then moving them to pinch the bridge of his nose.
In a few months, this will all be over, he said.
Because you will have succumbed to the chronic stress headaches and bottle rocket trauma? I asked, taking one of his hands and gently pushing at the pressure point between his thumb and forefinger. When he smiled, the skin around his visible eye crinkled.
Because in a few months we'll be married, and we can enter the witness protection program.
Sounds like a plan, I said, quirking my lips as I stared at him.
What?
I shrugged. It's just weird. Normally, I'd be the first person you'd call when something like this trailer deal comes up. But now it's Gabriel. I think you're entering into a functional adult relationship with someone besides me. I guess the wedding is the final sign that we're growing up.
I don't know how I feel about it, Zeb said absently.
He was looking at me intently. His good eye seemed glazed over, unfocused. This was not the way Zeb normally looked at me. This was the way Zeb looked at mint condition, still in the package, G.I. Joe Battle Force dolls. Since he was dealing with a traumatic injury, I was willing to attribute this bizarre behavior to a concussion. It doesn't suck.
It does a little bit.
He cupped the back of my head in his hand, bringing my face almost uncomfortably close to his. For a weird moment, it felt as if he was going to kiss me,
which for our relationship was highly unusual. I leaned away, pulling his hands from my neck. Gabriel came in and found the two of us staring at each other, Zeb's hands in mine. Zeb dropped his hands to his sides and looked vaguely guilty.
If you weren't Jane's best friend and engaged to a beautiful and violently monogamous woman, I might find this upsetting, Gabriel commented dryly.
Chapter 6
Werewolf fathers insist on pre-approving proposals of marriage. In fact, it's rumored that the human tradition of asking for a woman's hand came from a human who failed to ask for betrothal permission and actually lost his hand. Mating rituals and love customs of the were.
Why did I try to make more friends?
I muttered, shielding my eyes from my reflection in the bridal barn's fitting room mirror. This is what comes of having girlfriends. If the picture of Jolene's chosen bridesmaid's dress was bad, the live version was horrifying. Basted together, the putrefied peach piecework was not just unflattering, it was insulting. My hips looked wider than my shoulders, wider than the dressing room door, in fact. My preternaturally pale skin looked cheesy and almost blue. I actually looked dead, which was a first. At no time had I ever wished harder that vampires couldn't see themselves in mirrors. After much groveling on both sides, Zeb and Jolene made up, which meant I was still trapped in bridesmaid dress hell. I took cold comfort in the fact that I wasn't alone. I would be walking down the aisle with Jolene's legion of cousins. The McLeans went with a lean theme in naming this generation's females. Raylene, Lurline, identical twins Charlene and Darlene, then triplets Arlene, Braylene, and Angeline. It was pronounced Angel-Lene, by the way. That's a mistake I didn't make twice. All of them were gorgeous, red-haired, and green-eyed, with ridiculously high cheekbones. And all of them pretty much hated me. First, I was an outsider, which could have been overlooked if I was not also a vampire. Compounded by the injustice of my position as best maid, despite being a relatively new friend, this created another sense of clan shame among the cousins. The fact that Zeb and Jolene chose me to avoid a blood feud among Jolene's cousins escaped them. Despite the snubbing of her firstborn, Lurline, from the best maid spot, Jolene's Aunt Vonnie was finally persuaded to keep her shop open after dusk so I could come in for a fitting. I'm pretty sure the indignity of having to rework her schedule for a vampire is what put the burr up her butt. Buying your first prom gown at the bridal barn is a rite of passage for every Half Moon Hollow girl. Because it was the only place in town where you could buy a prom gown. Or a wedding gown. Or a bridesmaid gown. We had a formal wear chain store called Mr. Monkey Suit in the early 1990s, but they mysteriously shut their doors after 6 months. Before I knew the barn was owned by a werewolf, I figured that the lack of competition stemmed from the claustrophobic confines of hollow commerce. Now, I thought it may have been because Aunt Vonnie ate her competition. Now that I knew how much time Aunt Vonnie spent in the nude, I found it deliciously ironic that she owned a dress shop. Werewolves don't like wearing clothes when they're in the home field. Clothing makes life awkward for werewolves, for whom the most comfortable state is to be in wolf form. In an environment where they're relaxed, sometimes they don't even realize they've changed. There's a subtle blending of light, and suddenly there's a full-grown wolf standing next to you. It's difficult to change form while dressed. At the same time, adult werewolves become conditioned to associate clothing with being out in public among humans. It's handy as a reminder to help keep the change in check. Jolene says that modern wares have adopted the human habit of dressing for weddings, since so many of them involve human guests. And a nude officiate can be terribly off-putting. The wares figure if you have to be dressed, it might as well be the most elaborate, uncomfortable clothes possible, which led Vonnie to open her shop. The problem was that Vonnie's tastes hadn't quite evolved since the days of big shoulder pads and bigger hair. The dresses in the bridal barn only came in colors that cannot be found in nature. Also, I don't think any of the fabrics were manufactured after 1984. We're talking a lot of large-gauge sequins.
Jane, are you coming out?
Jolene called from outside the dressing room.
No, I whispered,
transfixed by the horrific reflection before me. Wasn't there a Greek myth that ended like this? From just outside the privacy curtain, Jolene said quietly,
"Zeb says you're not thrilled with the dress."
"And that means I have to kill Zeb for telling you that," I said, poking my head out of the dressing room but keeping the curtain closed tight around my neck. "I hate it when couples make up. It means they repeat everything other people have told them in some sort of confessional fit."
"It can't be that bad."
Jolene ripped back the curtain.
"Whoa."
"Yeah," I deadpanned.
"It will look different," Jolene promised. "After the rows and the ruffles and everything you're put on, it'll look different."
"I don't think ruffles are going to improve the situation."
"I know," Jolene whispered. "I know. It's horrible. I've worn that dress in 6 of my cousin's weddings, including my cousin Raylene, who chose black taffeta for a July ceremony. Nobody looks good in it." "That's the whole point. Parade the bridesmaid out in this dress. Make them look like cows."
"Hey," I glared at her. "There's no need to agree with me quite so much." She ignored me.
"So that when you walk down the aisle, you seem gorgeous by comparison. That's the real tradition behind the dress."
"You're already gorgeous by comparison," I hissed.
"Thanks,"
she said, glowing briefly.
"But it's the one concession I've made to the pack about the wedding. I'm not marrying a ware. I'm having a nighttime ceremony to accommodate the vampire guests. I'm not marrying in the boneyard."
"Boneyard?" She shook her head.
"Don't ask. I went against almost every McLean family tradition to marry Zeb. This is the one thing I agreed to."
She paused when I arched an eyebrow.
"That you have to wear. You can get me really, really drunk at my bachelorette party and take embarrassing pictures,"
she promised. "I was going to do that anyway," I snarked. Aunt Vani bustled into the room with a bolt of lime green chiffon. My lack of enthusiasm was clearly an affront to her craft.
"I haven't stayed open past 6 in 30 years of business,"
she reminded me. "I really appreciate it, Miss Vani," I said, with all the cheer I could rally dressed like an extra from Footloose. "And thank you for making the dresses. They're just stunning." Aunt Vani easily picked up on my shifting eyes and twitchy lips, or maybe I was pushing it with the empty double thumbs up. I have got to learn how to lie.
"Every McLean bride since 1984 has chosen the ruffles and dreams for her bridesmaids,"
she sniffed, turning back to the sewing room.
"It's very popular here in town. I've made this dress in 32 colors for more than 100 weddings.
"Well, that certainly explains the Hollow's unusually high divorce rate," I muttered.
"I heard that,"
Aunt Fanny yelled from the back. I was going to have to watch myself around werewolves and their super hearing. I turned to Jolene. "There will be pictures. Oh, yes, pictures and male strippers."
"I accept your terms,"
Jolene said solemnly. "Get me out of this thing." I sighed, angling the ridiculously placed zipper toward her. "Can I at least see the wedding dress?"
"I ordered it special on the internet,"
she squealed as she ran into the back room. "Still need help with the zipper," I called after her. I turned and caught a look at myself in the mirror.
Gah!
Seriously, how does a veteran seamstress sew a zipper so that you need go-go gadget arms to reach it? I spun in circles like a dog chasing its tail. I heard shuffling and giggling as Jolene tried on her wedding dress. She emerged from the dressing room, a vision, in an elaborately beaded white Edwardian gown. And despite the universal laws of wedding dress ordering, the standard size 4 actually fit her perfectly. The cut emphasized her tiny waist and gave her the ideal hourglass silhouette. Every move sent a burst of sparkles from the beading. Her skin seemed clearer, brighter, creamier, her eyes a truer green. "I hate you. You're completely gorgeous, and I hate you," I grumbled, feeling even more dumpy in my half-basted peach death shroud.
"Thanks,"
she sighed dreamily. "Meanwhile, I'm still dressed like this, and..." I sent a glance at my watch.
"The engagement party," she cried. "I almost forgot."
"Well, that's probably just your brain's protective response to the prospect of seeing Mama Ginger," I said as she dashed off. "Hey," I'm still in this thing, I yelled after her. You know that feeling you get when you walk into a room and you're completely underdressed? That feeling would have been welcome at the Lavelle McLean engagement fete. Claiming that the McLean family was hogging all of the pre-wedding revelry, Mama Ginger threw together a last-minute celebration of Zeb and Jolene's engagement. Engagement parties are a rarity in the Hollow, generally thrown by swankier families at the Half Moon Hollow Country Club and Catfish Farm. Mama Ginger pulled a fast one when she listed the venue address on the invitations. Since few of us spent a lot of time at Eddie Mac's, where local rednecks went to find their future former spouses, we were not familiar with the exact street number. Floyd and Mama Ginger had special access to the back room there as members of the pool league. It was a surprise party, as in, surprise, you're wearing 3-inch heels, but your party's being held at a place where the table linens come from wall-mounted dispensers. I should have suspected something when the invitation encouraged us to dress up. This may have been a counterattack following the great wedding date change. A week after the wedding invitations were sent out, Mama Ginger decided that her allotted 100 were not enough. Apparently, her open distaste for the bride didn't preclude Mama Ginger's right to invite every person she'd ever met to her only son's wedding. She convinced a neighbor who sold stationery out of the back of her dad's gas station to help Mama Ginger design her own version of the invitation, featuring a precious moments bride and groom. Mama Ginger sent it out to another 150 distant relatives and passing acquaintances, so that instead of assuming the risk of inviting 100 carefully selected strangers to their farm, the McLeans now risked exposing their secret to 250 people even Mama Ginger wouldn't recognize face-to-face or sober. When Mimi and Jolene got wind of this maneuver, their only logical defense seemed to be moving the wedding up a week without planning to tell Mama Ginger until the last minute. And it would have worked if Misty Kilgore, whose husband was shooting the wedding photos, had kept her mouth shut in line at the Piggly Wiggly. Mama Ginger responded with a world-class hissy fit, further exacerbated when she was told that anyone who was not on the original mailing list would be turned away at the McLean's gate by large male cousins. This steely-spined response by Mimi McLean forever secured my loyalty and devotion. Mama Ginger's countermove was to tell Misty Kilgore that the wedding was off, prompting Mr. Kilgore to rip up the contract and schedule another wedding that weekend. Since there were no local photographers available, it was decided that Jolene's cousin Scooter, who had a lazy eye and astigmatism, would be taking the pictures. It was safe to say at this point that Jolene had lost all control of the wedding planning process. So I guess I shouldn't have been surprised to be standing under a guttering neon Budweiser sign, wearing a strapless black dress and hair that took an alarming amount of time and pins. Vampires don't fare well in redneck establishments. There tend to be a lot of easily breakable wooden objects and, well, rednecks. And Eddie Max just happened to be the county's main supplier of T-shirts, showing a cartoon vampire being stomped on by the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, hello, Jane, honey,
Mama Ginger cried, rushing past Jolene and the recently de-eye-patched Zeb. She wrapped her arms around me in an inescapable vice-like grip and swung me around in time to the jukebox's blaring Islands in the Stream.
There's my girl. How are you?
Fine, I said, smiling politely, even as Jolene's face fell at this blatant display of favoritism. Behind her back, Mimi sent Mama Ginger a poisonous glare. Mr. Lavelle, I said, smiling politely at Zeb's father. Floyd Lavelle hadn't had a civil word for me since I refused to fetch him a beer at a Labor Day barbecue. I was 7, and even then I didn't know my place. He grunted in what passed for a greeting and headed for the bar.
Now I made my special pimento cheese balls because I remember how much you liked them,
Mama Ginger said, pinching my cheek.
You're so skinny.
Okay, that hurts, I said, prying her carmine-tipped pincers from my face. This is Gabriel. He's a friend of mine and Zeb's. Oh, and a groomsman. Mama Ginger caught sight of our joined hands. Her sharp brown eyes narrowed at Gabriel. She mumbled,
How nice,
and turned on her heels. Mama Ginger continued to greet her guests, most of whom were bar regulars. Jolene might as well have been furniture for all the attention she was paid. For example, the little banner Mama Ginger had hung simply said, Congratulations, Zeb. Leaving room for the possibilities. To add insult to gastronomical injury, the bar's special event package provided a crock pot of beer weenies, a grocery store sheet cake, and lots of beer on tap. That was it. For 50 people. Fortunately, Mimi McLean saw this coming and called in werewolf reinforcements. Constantly thinking and talking about food is what makes werewolves some of the world's greatest chefs and restaurateurs. For example, Jolene's Uncle Clay owned one of the best lunch places in town. His personal food philosophy was meat, meat, and more meat, which might explain the shop's specialty. A sandwich, piled high with two pork tenderloins, Black Forest ham, and bacon. Within a half hour, several aunties and uncles arrived with huge platters of cold cuts, barbecues, salads, cupcakes, and cookies, which the bar crowd fell on like hyenas on a fresh zebra carcass. I sidled up to Mimi, who was watching the proceedings from a very dark corner. Her irises were constricted in a distinctly non-human manner. I slipped an arm around her waist, stroking a soothing hand along her spine. "Will you adopt me?"
"Will it piss off Ginger?"
she muttered. I nodded. "Probably."
"I'm trying to be as patient as possible, but if that witch doesn't ease up on my baby, I may not be held accountable for my actions."
We watched as the buffet was moved off pool table 3 so Herb Baker's Friday night group could proceed with their usual game. I whispered,
"I'll help you hide the body."
Mimi winked at me and snuffled my cheek.
"You're a good girl."
It was at this point, after her third rum and coke, that Mama Ginger decided to make a toast. Ish. She tinkled a napkin dispenser against the side of her glass to get our attention, which, given the noise level, only worked for those of us with super hearing. Finally, she asked that someone unplug the jukebox. Actually, she told Dick to unplug that damn thing before I put a foot through it.
"Now settle down, y'all. Settle down, I have something to say."
She sighed, letting loose what appeared to be a silent belch.
"Well, none of us thought this day would come."
She put her arm around Floyd, who was propped up next to her on a bar stool, just this side of Pleasantly Buzzed, just south of the hostile outburst zone.
"And if anything, we always thought, well, hoped, that Zeb would be marrying Jane."
The entire room fell silent. Hell, the world stopped spinning. Mimi shot me a mortified look. Jolene turned a sort of pale blue-gray. Zeb seemed oblivious to the fact that his future wife had just been insulted. In fact, he smiled at me and winked, which seemed to make Jolene's uncle's faces contort into sock puppet shapes.
"You know, those two have been friends since they were in preschool. They were always together, always so close. We worried about him being best friends with a girl. I mean, his daddy nearly died when he caught them playing with Cabbage Patch dolls. And Jane never dated anybody for very long. Anybody."
Dick snorted, earning him an elbow to the ribs from me. Mama Ginger flinched at the sudden movement and wobbled a little against the bar.
"We all just assumed she'd give up on other guys and come back to Zeb. Jane wore the prettiest blue dress to the prom. I still have the boutonniere she gave Zeb, pressed in my Bible. I just always thought that Jane would give me the most beautiful grandbabies. They say sometimes it skips a generation."
Mama Ginger warbled.
"We all just love Jane so much. We've always said she was the daughter we always wanted. She's always been a part of the family."
"But now we're just so happy to be welcoming Jolene into that family," I said in a loud, explicitly cheerful voice.
"Oh, yeah, Joanne,"
Mama Ginger said, sobering enough to glance in Jolene's direction, but not, apparently, to get her name right.
"She seems like a nice enough girl."
Jolene watched her future mother-in-law expectantly, waiting for some semblance of a welcome, a compliment. Instead, Mama Ginger smiled brightly and announced,
"Well, let's eat, everybody."
Jolene's face fell. I tried to make eye contact, tried to make some sort of connection to show her I was on her side, that being Mama Ginger's favorite was about as desirable as being the prettiest pig at the fair. But her own mother had wrapped a protective arm around her and ushered her into a quiet corner. I fought against my instincts to soothe and smooth ruffled feathers and backed out of sight toward the back door. I slammed the door against the chatter and the smoke. I sank against the building, ignoring my natural aversion to touching whatever was growing on the peeled aluminum siding. I cringed as Gabriel poked his head out the door. His look of concern melted into an absurd smile.
This is just...
Yeah, I laughed. He wrapped his arms around me, rubbing my bare arms to ward off the chill. The brisk motion took on a slow, circling pattern as I wrapped my fingers around his collar and pulled him toward me. His mouth was so cool and clean and soft on mine, reminding me that there were normal places and people in the world. Normal, at least by my standards. It was every great kiss you'd ever imagined, only we were surrounded by junker cars and leaning against a molding air conditioning unit. I leaned my forehead against his. I will repay you in unspeakable physical favors if you can erase any trace of this party from my memory.
I am intrigued by your offer. Can we discuss a down payment?
He grinned as his fingers danced along my spine, deftly manipulating the zipper. This was a matter of some concern, considering that A, this wasn't the kind of dress that allowed foundation garments, and B, we were sort of out in the open. Released from their chiffon prison, my breasts spilled into his waiting hands. Do I look like the kind of girl who would do this sort of thing in a parking lot? I asked, entering the battle for control of my zipper.
Dick said you'd gotten down and dirty in a parking lot.
Gabriel smirked.
What happened to ignoring and disdaining Dick? Can we go back to that?
I whispered as he pressed me against the wall, pinning me with exquisite pressure. I could hear the ping of hairpins on the pavement as his fingers slid into my carefully arranged updo. Gabriel slipped his free hand under my skirt to tug at my panties. Unable to support me and strip me at the same time, he finally ripped them off my hips. You owe me a pair of good black panties, I told him in mock dismay. My fangs extended, nipping at his bottom lip. He grinned at me, even as the pin drop of blood welled at his mouth. Maybe I am the kind of girl who will get down and dirty in a parking lot.
I'll just hold on to these, then, he said, tucking them into his jacket pocket.
When can we leave? I murmured against his lips. When can I take you home and... We both froze as the door swung open and our sensitive eyes were assaulted with light.
Oh, my.
We turned to see Mama Ginger framed in the doorway, eyes wide with shock, and I was pinned against the wall, and the wreckage of my panties hung from Gabriel's pocket like a frayed handkerchief. Mama Ginger! Gabriel set me down on my feet and held out his jacket to hide my efforts to pull up my dress. I burst into helpless giggles as I lost my grip on the bodice and the dress fell. No jokes about having nothing to hold it up, thank you. Puddling at my waist.
This isn't funny,
Mama Ginger scolded. Maybe if I bash my head against something enough times, it will be. I grunted as I once again secured my chest under my dress.
Jane, I am ashamed of you,
Mama Ginger cried, pulling me into the doorway. She turned on Gabriel.
And you, I can't believe you. If you weren't in the wedding party, I would send you home. Now you get in there and sit with the rest of the groomsmen.
Gabriel was truly flustered.
Now see here. I don't want to see you near Jane for the rest of the night. When I was a girl, nice young men did not paw at young ladies in dirty alleys.
When she was a young lady, Mama Ginger got cited for mooning a busload of tourists in town for the annual lace-tatting convention. But Gabriel didn't know that, so he looked appropriately chagrined.
Yes, ma'am,
he said, slinking back into the bar.
And Jane, you just go on over to the bride's table and sit down. But first, fix your lipstick. You look like a tramp.
My jaw dropped.
You heard me. Now scoot.
When I emerged from the bathroom, feeling far less clean than when I went in, Jolene, Zeb, my vampire friends, and some of Jolene's uncles were doing shots at the bar. This included Uncle Zane, who sounded a lot like Boomhauer from King of the Hill. The only words he could understand were his curse words, and he cursed a lot. His twin brother, Dane, made a point not to curse, instead using elementary-grade curse substitutes. When I made my pre-shot toast, "Here's to heavy security at the wedding," Zane said something along the lines of,
"Like that'll do any damn good."
Dane told Zane to watch his effing mouth in front of the effing ladies, and I couldn't help but laugh.
Oh, come on, just say the words,
Jolene drawled, patting Dane on the back.
We all know what you're trying to say. Just go ahead. Be a man and go for the gesto.
I chuckled. Either you've had too much punch or I think you mean gusto. Zeb snorted as he took another drink.
Well, Jolene's not exactly a rocket scientist. She also says foo paw instead of faux paw and library instead of library.
Jolene recoiled as if Zeb had slapped her. Zane and Dane looked at Zeb as if they were sure they'd heard him wrong, then abandoned their drinks, returned to the werewolf side of the room, and glared at their nephew-to-be. Even Dick and Gabriel seemed uncomfortable. Despite the disturbing pallor that had sapped her cheeks, Jolene gave a forced, tinkly little laugh.
It's a good thing I have smart friends. I think I'll just get some more punch.
Zeb rolled his eyes and punched Gabriel's shoulder.
It's a good thing she's got such a pretty face, because there's not much going on behind it.
I sent a significant look toward Zeb. He had that hazy, befuddled look on his face again, like someone coming out of anesthesia. He seemed to shake it off, his eyes blinking as he tried to follow Jolene's path across the room. A brief flash of remorse crossed his features. Then it was replaced by some empty, macho smirk. You might want to go apologize to her. Zeb took another drink and crushed the cup in his hand before tossing it over his shoulder.
You're right. Otherwise, I'll be paying for it later. Am I right?
Zeb slapped me on the butt and wandered away. My jaw dropped. Gabriel's eyes narrowed, but from the look on his face, I don't think he was able to process whether Zeb had just besmirched my honor or butt-slapping was something we did when I was still human. Trust me, it was not. But I wasn't about to goad my drunk vampire boyfriend in this tense atmosphere.
What was that about?
Asked Dick, who was watching Zeb with a mix of irritation and concern.
Zeb's not usually such a... asshole?
Gabriel slurred and swayed slightly. Eager to change the direction of the conversation, I stared into Gabriel's dilated pupils. How did you get drunk so quickly? I thought our vampire constitutions kept us from being cheap drunks.
I'm not drunk, Gabriel cried, indignant. All I've had to drink was this punch Jolene's cousins gave me. It's delicious. It tastes like pineapple.
You were completely sober when I left you a few minutes ago. I sniffed the cup and turned to watch as the bartenders poured 2-gallon jugs of grain alcohol into a galvanized metal tub with Kool-Aid, sliced apples, pineapple, and pears. Like many a college freshman before him, Gabriel had fallen into the hooch trap. Hooch is liquid evil. It's about 40 proof, but the Kool-Aid and fruit cover the taste of the alcohol, so before you know you're drunk, you've had about 4 solo cups worth. Well, it's a good thing you can't eat the fruit, I muttered.
I think I'm going to enjoy this,
Dick chuckled, watching as Gabriel squinted at the neon bar lights.
Gabriel couldn't hold his liquor when we were kids, either. He ruined the last good carpet at my house, sicking up my daddy's best bourbon. You should have seen how green his face got.
Gabriel slapped a clumsy hand over Dick's mouth.
Shh! Jane shouldn't have to hear that story. It's not a nice story, you can tell by looking at her face. I love Jane's face. She makes the sweetest little face when I take her.
Hey! He pouted when I slid his hooch out of reach.
I think I'd like to hear this,
Dick said, his expression serious. You go outside and sober up, I told Gabriel, shoving him toward the door. I turned on a smirking Dick. You stop thinking about my sex faces. Dick grinned.
I'll just follow Gabriel outside to see if he throws up.
Worst party ever, I grumbled as I searched for the bride-to-be. Jolene was drowning her sorrows in beer weenies. I would tell her that she was going to eat her way out of a size 4, but she had that hyper-metabolism going for her. Plus, you just don't want to interrupt someone with super strength when they're stress-eating. So I sort of nudged a plate of chicken wings at her without making eye contact. I saw a biologist do it once on the Tiger special, something about submissive gestures and keeping all of your digits intact. Jolene tore into the wings with a sort of glum sniffle, but I could tell her heart wasn't in her munching. I'm sorry Zeb said that, I told her.
Oh, he didn't mean it,
she sniffed.
I know, he's just under a lot of stress right now with the wedding and my family and everything. I mean, the poor thing's been getting those headaches and they make him cranky. It would help if his mama would ease up a little bit and stop being so...
Jolene paused, tears shimmering at the corners of her eyes.
Why doesn't she like me?
Oh, honey, I said, wrapping an arm around her. She doesn't like anybody. She doesn't even really like me. She just likes to feel she has some control over the situation. She's planned for me to marry Zeb for years, and she accepts change about as well as my mama. You just have to give her a few months. She'll come around. Maybe a few years. Give her a few years. Jolene stuffed a nacho in her mouth and didn't respond.
Zeb loves you,
I offered. She sniffed, but was not cheered. Mama Ginger just caught me in a compromising position with Gabriel out back, half topless and fully commando. That's gotta add a few points back in your column. Jolene brightened, stuffing three meatballs in her cheek.
Thanks. That helps.
What are friends for? Chapter 7. Humans may mistake the wooing techniques of werewolves, particularly males, as predatory. Studies show that 10% of human-werewolf relationships begin with the male being maced. Mating rituals and love customs of the were. After the shipwreck that was the engagement party, gah, even I'm doing the Titanic thing now, I had to establish some special phone rules for Jolene. For example, calling me several times during my midday sleepy time because someone is bleeding, unconscious, or on fire is acceptable. Calling me several times during my midday sleepy time because Mama Ginger tried to persuade the county clerk that Jolene and Zeb were actually first cousins and ineligible for a marriage license? Not so much. Mama Ginger was well on her way to the Mother of the Groom Hall of Shame. Convinced that the invitation debacle hadn't sent a clear enough message, she started making demands. She wanted her friend Eula, who had never baked more than a bunt, to handle the blue and white nautical-themed wedding cake for 200. She wanted Jolene to announce at the reception that the wedding coincided with Uncle Ace's 54th birthday and to arrange for the DJ to play Friends in Low Places in his honor. Mama Ginger also had very firm ideas about what she did not want for the wedding. For instance, Jolene's Aunt Lola runs a florist shop and had generously offered to make the floral arrangements. Mama Ginger claimed that she was allergic to pollen and insisted on silk flowers. She even went to the local floral outlet and bought out their supplies of silk daisies in magenta and yellow, nowhere near the delicate white lily arrangements Jolene wanted. Mama Ginger had also eschewed the tradition of hosting the rehearsal dinner after Jolene's mother declined another evening at Eddie Mac's. Instead, Mimi offered to hold the dinner at the farm, since that's where the rehearsal would be and it was rather remote. Mama Ginger said,
"Hell, just plan the whole thing,"
and decided to take no part in it. When Mama Ginger tried to change the theme of the wedding from Titanic to North and South, I had to turn my phone off. I had never seen Mama Ginger this fired up. Well, there was that time Zeb got cut from the academic team in high school and she slipped Ipecac into the team advisor's coffee. Poor Mrs. Russell was throwing up for 3 days and missed the state governor's cup meet. The scary thing, then and now, was that Mama Ginger honestly thought she was doing what was best for Zeb. Much like that cheerleader's mom in Texas. Zeb had problems of his own with Jolene's far too affectionate cousin. Like most predators, Vance sensed a weakness. For all their grudged acceptance of Zeb, the pack did not appreciate Mama Ginger's lack of affection for Jolene or her clear favoritism toward me. Vance was exploiting that, grumbling here and there among the relations that Zeb's family didn't appreciate the jewel they were getting. Oh, and that I was not to be trusted, because no man can just be friends with a woman, especially a vampire woman. If I'd had my phone on, I might have gotten a warning that Mama Ginger was planning to show up at my house early one evening for a chat. Translation, to pick apart my relationship and zero in on my soft, emotional underbelly. The woman was like Hannibal Lecter in polyester pants. Wearing my flannel reindeer pajamas and sipping my morning cup of chock-full of platelets, I was not prepared for company or the toxic apple cobbler she was carting into my house. I could only pray that Aunt Jetty didn't decide to pop in at home. The first and only time Mama Ginger had visited River Oaks was for Jenny's first baby shower. She lit up in the parlor and put the cigarette butt in a decorative urn that was on the mantel. which contained my beloved great-grandma Early's ashes. Jetty, who was corporeal at the time, tossed Mama Ginger out on her ear and threw her straw handbag after her, telling her never to darken the door again. In retaliation, Mama Ginger started a rumor that Aunt Jetty was secretly a vegetarian. It wasn't nearly as damaging as she'd anticipated. Faced with a noxious dessert and no available escape routes, I took Mama Ginger into the kitchen and shooed Fitz out the back door. While lovable, Fitz, a pound-adopted product of indiscriminate breeding among several species, was neither handsome nor smart. Also, his proclivity for rolling around in dead things left him vulnerable to accidentally consuming Mama Ginger's cobbler. I scooped up two pungent helpings and offered Mama Ginger some coffee, which I needed myself if I were going to socialize at the vampire equivalent of 5 a.m.
"Well, isn't this nice?"
Mama Ginger sighed as we pulled stools up to my island countertop. She tucked her fork into the gooey concoction.
"We didn't really get a chance to talk at the engagement party. And I miss our talks, Jane. So, tell me all about this Gabriel. Tell me all about the man who stole you away from my Zeb."
I spluttered my coffee a little while I tried to come up with a palatable explanation of my relationship with Gabriel. "I met him last year, right after I left the library. He's a very interesting man. He's good to me, very protective. He's helped me make a lot of big changes in my life." I have to learn to speak with fewer ellipses.
"But what's he like?"
Mama Ginger pressed. "He's lived around here his whole life. He likes Zeb a lot, and he's comfortable with my having a male best friend. We're a great fit for each other. We practically finish each other's sentences." Because I'm usually interrupting him.
"Well, if he's lived here all his life, why haven't I ever met him?"
Mama Ginger demanded.
"Who are his people? What does he do for a living? How serious is he about the two of you?"
"Wow, that's a lot of questions," I said.
"I'm just worried about you, Jane,"
Mama Ginger tisked, patting my hands.
"I don't want you to settle for some no-good loser with a good line because you're desperate."
"I'm not desperate," I exclaimed.
"You're 30.
28, I corrected.
"And at this point, you'll grab onto anything."
Mama Ginger shrugged. I grumbled, "That is not completely accurate." Mama Ginger demanded,
"Then where is Gabriel right now? Why isn't he here with you?"
This was a pertinent question, but I wasn't about to admit that to Mama Ginger. The truth was, I hadn't seen Gabriel since the engagement party. He was in Lisbon this week, discussing the sale of some residential buildings he owned there. At least, I thought that's what he said in the voicemail he left me the day after the party. He hadn't picked up his cell phone when I'd called, 20 or so times over the last few days to try to get a better explanation. I even went so far as to call the hotel where he was supposed to be staying, but they didn't have a Gabriel Nightingale registered. I was clinging to the hope that he'd either changed his plans or registered under some assumed name, such as Mr. I Am Deceased. "Gabriel spends a lot of time traveling for work," I said, choosing my words carefully. "He owns a lot of different businesses, and he has to look in on them from time to time." Mama Ginger sighed, rolling her heavily shaded eyes at my naivete.
"Oh, honey. My cousin Pam said the same thing about her husband Claude and his plumbing supply business, and then she found out that he had another family over in Butler County. He even gave their sons the same name so he wouldn't mess up and call the wrong kids to supper."
"I don't think that's something I need to worry about, and we don't have the kind of relationship where we have to see each other every day."
"Well, why not? Why doesn't he want to see you every day?"
she demanded.
"Aren't you worth that kind of commitment? Where's he going with this? Have you two even talked about marriage?"
"No," I laughed. "We haven't talked about getting married. Because state law prohibits it."
"Well, why not? Tick-tock, tick-tock, Jane. I can hear your biological clock ticking. You don't have time to waste on some silly little fling that's not going to go anywhere. If you want to have babies, you have to speed things along."
Dang it. The finality of vampirism had kept me from thinking about motherhood, or my inability thereof, for a while. Realizing that little Andy and Bradley were to be her only grandchildren, Mama had stopped inquiring after my stalled uterus and devoted her energy to her grand dog, Fitz. And since I'd been avoiding the church ladies who normally inquired after my reproductive plans, I was no longer thinking defensively. My usual list of responses to, "When are you having kids?" including, "When they come with a return policy," had long since vacated the tip of my tongue. So, faced with the age-old kids question for the first time in months, all I could do was stutter, Who said anything about having kids?"
"I always just assumed you wanted them. You were so good with the kids down at the library. They loved you. And Zeb always talked about how much his students liked it when you came in for fairy tale time. I've always thought you were built to be a mom. You know, you have those good roomy breeding hips anyway. Might as well put them to good use."
The cracking of my unhinged jaw echoed in the empty kitchen as Mama Ginger resumed munching her dessert. She shrugged and chewed.
"I mean, if you don't have children, what's the point of being a woman?"
I think I deserve some sort of karmic reward for not using my vampire strength to pull Mama Ginger's lip over her head. Obviously, kids weren't an option. That door closed the moment I swallowed vampire blood. In general, vampires do not make great parents. Our night hours are incompatible with healthy human sleep patterns. It's hard to discipline a child when they can just run out into the daylight to escape you. And then there's the whole never aging and outliving your children by hundreds of years thing. Parents who have been turned while their children are still minors have to fight fang and nail to retain custody, even when there's a living parent in the home. And the last legislator who brought an undead adoption rights bill before Congress was literally laughed out of office. Gripping the countertop in a way that left moon-shaped dents in the surface, I counted to 10 and said, "That's just..." Mama Ginger dropped her fork dramatically and cut me off.
"Honey, I just can't stand it. I have to tell you, a mother's heart can't bear to see her son in such pain."
"Zeb's in pain?"
"Well, sweetie, isn't it obvious? He only went after Jolene when you hooked up with his Gabriel character. He said he doesn't see you nearly as often since you met Gabriel, and I know it's just breaking his heart. Jolene's just his rebound girl. He's not in love with her. He's trying to get back at you."
"For what?"
"For not loving him back,"
Mama Ginger cried. "Zeb doesn't love me. He loves Jolene," I said in a slow, deliberate tone one might use with someone who is very dim or slightly drunk, or both.
"But you're the perfect match. You always have been. You have such a long history together. You can't just throw that away. Hot pants and hormones do not make a marriage. Believe me, honey, I should know. I married for lust, and look what happened to me. A husband who doesn't talk, and in-laws who talk too damn much. What you have, friendship and companionship, that's what makes a solid, lasting marriage. That's what's going to make my boy happy."
"Please, God, let that be the last time you ever say hot pants in front of me."
"It's always been you and Zeb, in my head."
Mama Ginger paused to press her fingers to her temples as if she were about to peer into a future where I was somehow living and bearing her lots and lots of little Lavelles.
"Whenever I pictured Zeb's wedding, it was always you walking down that aisle."
"You're just not making sense right now," I told her. "If you just get to know Jolene, you'd see why Zeb loves her so much."
"She's not you. When you and Zeb are married, we'll be the perfect, big, happy family. You and Zeb can come over for dinner every other night. We'll go to flea markets on the weekends. And I'm sure Mama or Daddy Lavelle would be dead by the time you and Zeb started having babies, so you could move right into one of the trailers behind the house."
I think I might have sprained something trying to keep a straight face in response to that. "But if you really want a mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationship like that, Jolene would be more than willing to do all of those things with you. She wants to be close to you."
"But it won't be the same. That's not the way I pictured it."
"But it would be the way Zeb pictures it. I don't want Zeb, and he doesn't want me. He wants Jolene. Isn't it important to let him have some say in choosing his wife?"
"Oh, he's a man. He doesn't know what he wants."
She snorted.
If I didn't help him figure out what's best for him, what kind of mother would I be?
The kind of mother whose son doesn't dodge her calls?
You're going to see things my way soon enough,
Mama Ginger insisted. What does that mean?
I just want to help you and Zeb figure some things out, honey,
Mama Ginger said, standing up and hitching her bag over her shoulder.
Well, this was fun, but I'll just let myself out. I have to go meet with Jolene's mama over at the bridal barn to talk about dresses for the wedding. Like I need fashion advice from that dowdy thing. Vonnie's making some big deal about keeping the shop open late.
I stared after her as she toddled toward the back door. She smiled beatifically at me.
If you ever want to talk, give me a call.
I sat at the counter, staring at the untouched, oozy layers of pastry on my plate, my head spinning. Aunt Jetty appeared next to the sink, her lips quirked into a sneer.
What is that?
She asked, pointing at the remains of Mama Ginger's cobbler.
It's like an autopsy with fruit.
Mama Ginger came calling to set the alarm on my biological clock. Oh, and to remind me that there's no point to me being a woman if I never have children.
Well, if that's true, I wasted a hell of a lot of money on pantyhose and lipstick,
Jetty snorted. I don't know where this is coming from. Why would she say something like that? And why am I letting it bother me? It's not like I can just decide to turn my lady parts back on.
Oh, honey, don't you think I heard the same thing my whole life?
She said, stroking her cold, insubstantial fingers down my back. Her voice pitched up 2 octaves.
Don't you know you're wasting your life? You're going to end up alone with no one to take care of you when you get old. What makes you think you're too good to get married and have babies like you're supposed to? Most of that was just your Grandma Ruthie. You have to ignore them.
But don't you ever regret it? I asked. Not having children of your own?
I didn't need to have children of my own, she grinned. I had you. I cared for you, taught you, learned from you. I may not have carried you in my womb, but I always carried you in my heart.
If I wasn't thinking about your womb right now, that would have been such a sweet sentiment, I said, leaning my forehead against her ghostly noggin.
Do you feel better now?
She asked. Eh, I waffled my hand. I'd feel better if I could eat about a gallon of Ben and Jerry's without vomiting. When Gabriel finally called 3 days later to let me know he was back in town, I decided it was time for me to take some initiative. With my ever-present fear of being a needy child, I usually waited around for him to call. But I figured a little manufactured romance was just the thing to get me out of my Mama Ginger-induced funk. I slipped into a silky red t-shirt and jeans and marched out the door to see him. Or at least I would have had I not opened the door to find Adam Morrow standing on my porch. And because I had a bit of momentum going, I ran smack into him and, in my panic, lifted him by the armpits to move him out of my way. Adam! I shrieked. He made a gurgling sound as I dropped a limp pile of veterinarian onto my porch. Adam, I'm so sorry, I said, picking him up and settling him back on his feet.
It's okay,
he said, clutching a squashed box, which I could now smell was flowers.
It was kind of cool.
What are you doing all the way out here?
I wanted to see you,
he said, uncrumpling the box and straightening the shiny red bow attached.
And I see now that surprising a vampire is not a good idea.
I stared at him, my mouth open, gaping like a suffocating goldfish.
Yeah, I figured out the whole vampire thing,
he said, a sheepish blush coloring his cheeks. Oh, man, even in the dark, that just made him cuter.
At the visitation that night, I didn't see you eat anything, and, well, no one sees you during the day anymore. You don't have to worry. I won't tell anyone. I just wanted to see you. I've been thinking about you a lot lately, and I've never known a real vampire before.
I laughed. I'm so glad I could be the first.
These are for you, he said, offering me the mangled box. It's jasmine. I thought you might like it. It's night blooming.
That was thoughtful, I told him. Adam Morrow brought me flowers. On the checklist of teenage daydreams that will probably never happen to me, that was number one. Now all I had to do was make out with one of the straight members of NSYNC and star in a movie with Hugh Grant. Unsure what to do with the box, I opened the door. A boulder of fur flew at us, giving me a full-on tongue bath. After deeming me sufficiently licked, Fitz turned his attentions to Adam, a strange man in dark clothes standing on our porch. Fitz is adorable in his own hideous way, but as a security system, he's pretty much useless.
Hey, boy.
Adam grinned, rubbing Fitz's muzzle as I led them into the living room. You're just a whole bunch of breeds, aren't you? Adam was not my vet, because the idea of spazzing out in front of him every time Fitz needed a checkup was not a happy one. Fitz proved to be a fascinating Mendelian model for him. I guess Adam had never seen a dog with eyes and ears that were each a different color. Fitz leaned into the scratching and let his tongue loll out to full length, useless and prideless. "So you're not weirded out by all this?" I asked, drawing my lips back from my fangs.
"No," he insisted. "Like I said, it's really interesting. You've changed a lot since high school."
I snorted. "That's an understatement." Aunt Jetty appeared behind Adam and gave me a big thumbs up. With Adam concentrating on Fitz, I mouthed, "I know," and shooed her away. Jetty grinned and vanished.
"What's it like? What's it like to be a vampire?" he asked.
"Weird," I said, looking at him. "Powerful, exciting, and occasionally humiliating, confusing, and painful. It's sort of like going through puberty all over again. Nothing about my life is the same. But there are some good things. Awesome night vision, for one. I'm still trying to balance things out. I mean, when we were taking those aptitude tests on career day, vampirism was not something that came up. I never could have predicted my life turning out this way, but I'll have the best story at our class reunion." Adam looked up and blurted,
"I was wondering if you might want to go to dinner sometime."
"I don't really eat," I said.
"Oh, right," he said, slapping his forehead. "Well, what about coffee? Or we could stay in and watch a movie if you're more comfortable with that. I'm up for anything. Just, I would like to spend time with you. What are you doing tonight?"
I was actually heading out to see my friend. The friend I mentioned at the funeral, the man friend. Adam's face fell a little bit.
"You're not making this easy for me, are you, Jane?"
"I don't think I'm supposed to make it easy for you," I said. "In fact, when I was a teenager, my mother gave me several lectures on why I shouldn't make this easy for you."
He laughed. "Well, you can't blame me for trying. Anytime you want to hang out, even if it's just as friends. I mean, I don't want to be just friends with you, but I'll take what I can."
"I'm not saying this right." He backed away from me, negotiating the steps without even looking down.
"Just call me sometime. Please."